Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Mike Saffo Podcast. As I'm sitting here in my studio apartment in New York City, I'm literally planning my next vacation and texting my two buddies. So I figured, why not talk some travel with one of the most respected and traveled people in the world, author of one of the best travel blogs out there. It's one of my favorite sites. My buddy, Gary Arndt. What's going on, Gary?
Not much. Just hanging out here in Minneapolis and enjoying the evening.
Nice to virtually meet you, my friend.
Yeah, same here.
Minnesota, are you a Vikings fan?
Nope, hate the Vikings. Grew up in Wisconsin. I'm part owner of the Packers.
You got a big game tomorrow against the Seahawks.
Yep.
Let me ask you this thing, Gary. Yeah. Yeah.
What?
You beat my Giants last year, so I'm not the biggest Packer fan in the world. So.
Yeah, but they've took us out of the playoffs a couple times. So. Even that year we were 15-1. So.
Yes, and also that freezing game in Lambeau when we missed two field goals and we won it. Brett Favre's overtime game, that was a huge win. We went on to win the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah, I think that was his last throw as a Packer or something was an interception, which is appropriate.
Hey, look, yeah, you and I, both big travelers. Does sports get interfere ever with your travels?
Sometimes. It's not usually something I'll go out of my way to do or see, but occasionally I will. I got to go to the finals of the Rugby World Cup in 2011. Which I felt was kind of wasted on me because I'm not that big of a rugby fan.
Okay.
that was really fun. I got to see New Zealand win, and then the people in New Zealand, that's all they care about. They just have one team, one sport. It's just the All Blacks and rugby. That's it. So it was nice to see them win because they had been, you know, disappointed a lot. I've learned enough to follow a cricket match to know what's going on, but not enough maybe to, like, talk intelligently about it. And I always keep up with, you know, my teams, with what's happening in the U.S.
Now, I know we had to do the podcast today or tomorrow. Where are you off to Monday?
Oh, well, I was going to go to Norway tomorrow, but
okay.
That got postponed. So now I'm not going to Norway tomorrow. I'm going to Norway in like a week. And I'm going to stop in Iceland on the way.
Two awesome countries. Now, I want to get right into it. I know you told your story 1,000 times, but the one generic question for those of people who aren't familiar with you, in 2007, you decided to do what?
Well, the decision came earlier. That was in like 2005. But basically, I had an internet company that I started in the 90s, and I sold it in 98 before everything hit the fan. And started a couple other companies. I ended up going back to school. I studied geology for 3 years. At this point, I was kind of in my mid-late 30s, and I didn't really know what to do. And I thought about going to get a PhD, and I really discovered that I liked learning, but I hated academia. So I just didn't know what to do, and I came up with this idea that I'd sell my house and travel around the world for a year. And so it took me a while to sell the house, tie up loose ends. In 2007, sold the house and set out. And that year around the world has kind of turned into 10. It's kind of never ended.
Yeah, you don't even have a home base, I was reading, right?
Now I do. I got a place in Minneapolis now. After 9 years on the road, I got kind of burned out. Living in hotel rooms and stuff all the time. So I got a place. It allows me to get work done. I can edit photos on a proper computer, on a big monitor, instead of doing it on a laptop, you know, cross-legged in a hotel room with crappy Wi-Fi. I even went out of my way to pick an apartment building that had fiber, so I have a gigabit internet connection. I'm like one of the fastest residential internet connections in the world.
Now,
so I solved my problem with vengeance.
Your blog, your site, everythingeverywhere.com, it's flat out
everything
incredible.
Everything-everywhere.com.
Right. And like,
yeah,
you
if you don't put in the
short...
dash, there was a British phone company that took the name. So this said, I used it for a couple years, but there's nothing I could do about it because they're like a multi-billion-dollar company. They're in the UK and in a different industry. So,
and
anyways.
I'm pretty sure your site does well enough. Everybody knows to put that little dash in there, so you're doing well. Now, Gary, your jaw-dropping pictures. I know you won Photographer of the Year. All these different accolades. When you started traveling, just say in 07, I guess you could say full time, was traveling photography a big part of that right away, or did you ease into that?
No, I knew nothing about photography when I started. Absolutely nothing. I bought a camera that was way over my head, and I didn't know how to use it. And I took a lot of bad photos, really bad photos. And the only thing I had going for me is the fact that I knew they were bad. Like, I was looking at them, and I was like, this is not what's in National Geographic. This is pretty horrible. So I basically kind of started a process of, like, okay, how can I make these suck less? And it's just kind of from there been a journey of just trying to continually suck less.
Now, let me ask you this. Did you know, like, you're taking photos, they're sucking less, like you said, and then did you think, okay, if I take better pictures, maybe my site will get more hits, or maybe I'll be not more respected, that's not the right word to say, maybe I'll be taken more seriously with better pictures? Did that go into it, or you just want to travel the world?
Yeah, so I was about 9 months into traveling. And I had a website, and I could probably have told you the names of all the people that read my website because it was just people I knew. not a lot. And I was, you know, I have a business background, and I was like 9 months into my trip, and I was in Hong Kong. And I kind of had this come to Jesus moment where I realized that this is kind of a waste of my time with what I'm doing. For example, I used to have a business. We had a network of video game websites, and we would do across the network like 50 million page views a month. So I had an idea of what real traffic was, and I was not doing anything close to that. So I realized I should either quit wasting my time with this website, or I should start thinking if I could make something of this. And back in 2007, nobody was really making anything off a travel website like this. So what I did in Hong Kong is I went to a newsstand and I bought every travel magazine. And I kind of just opened up a spreadsheet and I started, you know, paying attention to, like, you know, how many destinations do they mention in each issue? How many pages have photos? What, you know, just stuff like that. And one of the things I realized was photos are extremely important and they mention a lot of places in each issue. Like over 30 countries are mentioned editorially in each issue of a major travel magazine. And people are not going to that many countries in a month, let alone a year or even a lifetime for a lot of people. So they're not buying these magazines for travel planning necessarily. And what I realized it was basically pornography, travel pornography. You're watching people do things that you would like to do in places you would like to go. And I realized the importance of the visual element, that a lot of people would get these magazines and they would sit on their coffee table, but they wouldn't necessarily read them. They would page through them. Kind of like Architectural Digest or some of these magazines that people get, but, you know, they're not an architect. They just do it to impress people. And I realized the importance of photography. So I kind of doubled down on that, and it sort of paid off.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, when you go to a country, just say you're going to go to, we'll use Paris as an example. Do you get anxiety of it? Like, I need to get the perfect shot of the Eiffel Tower, perfect shot of this. Is that ever on your mind?
No, especially for something like the Eiffel Tower, because the Eiffel Tower has been, there's nothing original you can really do with the Eiffel Tower, not a whole lot, because it's been every day there's a million photos taken of it. I don't even think I'm exaggerating using that number. So you're not going to do anything too clever. I did a shoot there a couple years ago that it was a really overcast day. Or at night. So I went there at night, and it was really overcast, and we had this really blue hue in the sky, and we were able to do some creative things. I don't know how unique it was, but it was a little different take on it. But, no, I'm not usually too worried, because what you see and experience sometimes just happens. You can go to your way to get certain things, like a mountain or a building or a cityscape or something, and plan that out. But a lot of things are just spontaneous. You just happen to be there.
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, a lot of times I'll go to a place and I'm like, okay, I need to get the best picture. I get up like 4 in the morning just to get the one picture that, sadly, like you just said, a million other people have the same exact picture. Why am I getting up at 4? I think the coolest picture is seeing like a local on something. Like on your site, you have the fame, like you'll have normal pictures, but then you'll have like, is that a picture of like a monk with his cell phone? Like you have these awesome pictures. Like,
yeah,
I love your site. I just started going to it the past couple of months and I'm like addicted to it.
Yeah, I took that in Ethiopia, and that was literally an Ethiopian Coptic priest, Usain, his prayers, and he got a phone call. So he was walking out, and I turned around, and I got him, you know, with his cell phone and his prayer book, walking out. And a lot of people don't know he has a phone in his hand until they look close at it, because they think he's looking at his prayer book, but it's really his phone.
Now, I'm good friends with Lee Abamonte. I've had Henrik Jeppesen on a bunch of times. I love talking travel. And Lee went from, like, a backpacker to now, you know, he's sponsored, more luxurious. What kind of traveler are you? Backpacker, luxury?
No, I don't. I mean, if someone else is going to pay for it, I'm happy to stay at a luxury hotel. But I'm very hesitant to ever pay for that myself, because I would rather spend two nights at something that's a little less and stay two nights in the city rather than one. And most of what you get at a luxury place, I don't really care about, you know. As long as there's a bed and hot water and internet, that's all I need. So I'd rather spend it on other stuff.
At what point did you start? I know you mentioned, okay, I'm getting more traffic. What part of your journey were you like, holy shit, I can make some money off this?
It was several years later. My basic plan was the travel industry is very large. All of the newspapers and magazines will die, and that is happening, although it's kind of slowly happening. And if you have an audience, then eventually the money will come to you. And that's
so
kind of happened.
Yeah, I love the fact that you didn't go out there, and like I said, guys like Lee and Henrik, I'm not going out there to make money. I want to travel, and holy shit, this happened. Now I'll ride this wave, which is pretty awesome to basically get paid to travel, and you're doing something you're addicted to. Was there a country that, like, sold you, like, when you started traveling early, like, holy shit, I want to do this forever?
Oh, I think very early on. So I started – there's a kind of a route a lot of people take if they're on around the world.
Gary, you still there? I think we might have lost Gary. Yeah, the call with Gary dropped. I'm assuming he'll call right back. And go to his website as a way for him to call back, everything-everywhere.com. And it's set up so easy. You'll type in Europe, or there's a picture of Europe, and you click it, and there's 20, 30, 40, 50 countries. You click on Spain. You go to Barcelona. You go to Madrid. Anywhere he was gone. And you can actually buy photos from his site also. And I want to get to him when he calls back in. We've had Leon, like I said, a bunch of times, as I keep plugging his site. And the thing is always chasing 193, chasing 193 countries. And I know on one of his things, he said he was at like 180-something. But I'm not sure if he was going by the UN number or the most traveled people person site. So we're going to find out when he calls back. And here he is now. Gary, what's up with this
Hello?
Internet you were talking so highly of?
I don't know. I think it's on your end.
No, my Wi-Fi is solid over here. Gary, I was just actually talking about how many countries have you been to? Because there's people who just count countries, and they either go with most traveled people or they'll go with 193, because one of your sites said you were at like 180-something.
Yeah, that's the Traveler Century Club. So they have 326 locations. And, you know, it actually isn't a cut and dry thing, like how many countries are there? Because, yeah, there's 193 countries in the UN, but for all practical purposes, Taiwan, Kosovo, Palestine are pretty much, you know, independent countries that are recognized by at least a few or a lot of countries. You have the Vatican City, which is not part of the UN. And then you get into other places like Greenland, which is not independent, but you know, it's not Denmark. Or if you say, I'm going to France, you're talking about the place in Europe, not French Guiana in South America, which is technically part of France. It's part of France the same way Hawaii is part of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a different place. So you get into all these different divisions, and there's all sorts of messy distinctions. Then you get some places that are de facto independent, like Somaliland, Abkhazia, South Ossetia, but no one recognizes them, but they have their own government, and they kind of run their own show. So,
how about, you know what?
There's a lot of little exceptions.
Any countries that you haven't been to yet that would surprise me? Like, I didn't see much in South America.
There's a lot of countries. I've been to a lot of weird countries, and then there's some countries that are obvious ones I have not been to. I haven't been to Russia. I haven't been to mainland China. I haven't been to Jamaica. There are two countries in the Caribbean I haven't been to, Cuba and Jamaica. I've been to everything else.
I haven't been to Peru. Just to Cuba like 3 weeks ago, yeah.
Haven't been to Brazil yet, although I may go to Brazil next month, at least briefly. I'll be photographing at Iguazu Falls, and I'll probably go over to the Brazilian side. So, yeah, there's a lot of, kind of low-hanging fruit that's still out there yet.
Two-part question. One, do you have any desire to visit all the countries, or that doesn't drive you, really?
It's not – if that's my driving goal, I would have done it a long time ago. I could have easily done it. I mean, I've been within, like, 100 yards of China, and I just didn't bother to go. I've been – I could have gone to Saudi Arabia easily on like a layover at least or something. I didn't bother to do it.
How do you pick your places? I'll go, like right now we're thinking about going to Munich for Oktoberfest or whatever the cheapest flight is, I'll jump on and go to countries around there. What makes you pick? Like, I might go to Brazil. Is it just the photography?
Photography is really the driving thing because that's kind of my business now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is I like to visit World Heritage Sites. So, you know, most countries are pretty big. You know, there's a couple tiny ones, but even a place like Germany, you know, there's a big difference between some of the different states. So I'm always looking to go someplace new, but the place mm-hmm. isn't necessarily a country. It could be a different part. So I've been to Scotland, but I've only been to Edinburgh and Glasgow. So I'd love to go to the north of Scotland or to the Orkney Islands or something like that. And that would be returning to Scotland, but it would be doing a completely different thing.
Do you prefer to travel alone or with people?
It's easier to do it by yourself. Because
you're never scared or anything, right?
No. Yeah. No, not after doing this 10 years. You could drop me mm-hmm. in the middle of Syria probably and I'd find a way to goodbye. I'll be on a tour sometimes or occasionally I've traveled with other people. But then it's a matter of, you know, what do you want to do? What do they want to do? And the nice part of doing it by yourself is you don't have to compromise. You can just do what you want.
I was on your site and I think the coolest thing that I read, there was three things that really stuck out. How do you have the first National Geographic issue? How'd you get a hold of that?
I bought it on eBay like 17 years ago.
And it's legit, not a reissue. It's the original.
It's authenticated and everything, and it's sitting in a safe. But the issue one is not as rare as issue two. Actually, issue two is a lot rarer. I've never seen that for sale.
Oh, really? And, okay, two things that you did that was, I think, the coolest shit. Describe, because you only said it. I don't know if there's a picture of it. You were launched from a nuclear aircraft?
Oh, yeah. So a couple years ago, I was invited by the Navy, and they do these things for VIPs and media. And I got to land and stay overnight, actually, on the USS Harry S. Truman. So they were doing flight training and maneuvers off the coast of North Carolina. So we went on a Greyhound A2, which is a cargo plane designed for carrier landings. So we did the landing with the tail hook and everything, stayed there overnight, got to be on the deck while they were launching jets. I got to take pictures of that, which was really, really fun because there's so few places in the world where you can viscerally feel the power of a jet engine. And when you're like 20, 30 feet away from it, something. I mean, you have to wear several layers of ear protection. And just seeing how everything works on an aircraft carrier, everyone has a job. Everyone has, you know, their own responsibilities, and it all just works. And there should be people dying all the time. You know, you have these jets filled with bombs and fuel landing on a floating airstrip, and it all works because they all know their jobs and stuff gets done. And, you know, we even got to go to the bridge of the ship, and the thing they told me beforehand was ask the age of the guy whose hand is on the steering wheel, right? So this is like a $4 billion ship, and the guy who's actually driving it, like who's physically, his hand is on the wheel, is 18.
Okay, now that, and you know what? I have like this little fascination with like South Pacific Islands, and I've been to the Philippines out there, but my girlfriend and I, we're going to go to Australia, New Zealand. I'm going to hit up Guam, and you talked about Micronesia a few times. I had a good friend who is from Yap, and I've always had like a little fascination with it. So you talked about Micronesia. Talk to me about that and how you swam with the jellyfish in Palua, because I always hear that's one of the coolest things you can ever do in life.
It is. So in Palau, and so Micronesia refers both to the country, the Federated States of Micronesia, and then of which Yap, as you mentioned, is part of it. And then it's also a region which includes the country of Micronesia as well as Palau and the Marshall Islands. And Guam is kind of – it's usually not considered part of it, but it's next to it. That's probably the easiest way to get there.
Exactly.
It's a very – they don't get a lot of tourists. They get very few. But it's really easy to visit because they speak English. They use the U.S. dollar. They use the U.S. postal system, in fact. They have their own zip codes and state codes. And Palau, so Palau is like maybe 20,000 people, maybe a little under, seat in the United Nations. And they have these islands that are limestone islands, and there's depressions in them. And those are filled up with seawater from cracks through the rock. And jellyfish have gotten in there. And the jellyfish have evolved away their stingers, basically. So you can totally safe to swim with. I grew up in the Midwest, so I didn't know any better. So I just jumped in the water with the jellyfish. Whereas all these Australians and stuff that were with me, they grew up being afraid of jellyfish. So they were all very afraid to go in. Whereas I looked like I was some stud driving, you know, diving in the water. But in reality, it was just stupidity because I didn't know any better. But they're totally safe. And there's tens of thousands of them floating all around you, and it's a surreal experience. And there's a couple other places in the world, I think in Indonesia, that have lakes like that. But it's one of the coolest things I've ever done.
Yeah, I'm dying to go out there. And you know what picture I loved? And I hate to just keep talking about your photos, but the South Georgia Islands, that penguin picture, it was like 1,000 penguins on there. That I think that's my favorite picture that you posted. That picture is incredible.
Oh, there's about 100,000 penguins when you land. It's one of a lot of people want to go to Antarctica. And if you go to Antarctica, you will see penguins. But you won't see a lot of penguins because, quite frankly, there's just not a lot of land for them to breed on and, you know, to give birth and stuff. So it's the islands that are north of Antarctica where you see most of the penguins. And South Georgia has one of the largest penguin breeding colonies in the world. So we landed, and this is 2013 in January, which is their summer. And you get off the boat, and it's just as far as the eye can see, penguins. You know, just the whole landscape is penguins. And it's loud, and it smells, because it's all penguin crap and dead birds. And they have no fear of humans. None. They'll walk right up to you. They're curious and just check out what you're doing. And one of the coolest things I've seen.
I know this is like, I don't want to do the generic question thing. One overrated country, you think, and one underappreciated, overlooked country?
For overlooked countries, I would go with Oman.
Okay, why is that?
I get people every so often, I'll get people that go to, like, say, oh, I'm going to Dubai. What should I do? And I say, day one, get on the hop-on, hop-off bus, go see the malls. Day two, leave and go to Oman. Oman is closer to real Arabia. I mean, as much as you can in a modern day sense. It's not overdeveloped like you're going to see in Dubai or Abu Dhabi. You can get around really easy. The roads are great. Gas is cheap. All the signs are in Arabic and English, so not a problem. Pretty much everyone speaks English as well. And you can go out in the desert and drive and explore, and it's a really great place.
What passport stamp?
Overrated? I don't know. I think certain cities and things can be overrated. I don't know about an entire country. Because there's usually stuff that they may have that people just don't know about. And you just need to go and find it. And sometimes it's going, you know, not that far away.
What is your favorite passport stamp to get? The one you're most proud of?
At Port Lockroy in Antarctica, there's a British station there, and they have a place where you can get your passport stamped Antarctica. So I have one
of
those. And then
penguin on it? Yeah.
Yeah, but so Britain and Argentina don't really get along because of the Falkland Islands and the war and soccer and stuff. So when you sail to Antarctica, like most of the ships, like 90% of the visitors or more, go from Ushuaia, Argentina, to the Antarctic Peninsula and back. So when I arrived in Antarctica again, they stamped right over the British Antarctica thing, which was kind of a dick move, but
yeah,
to be expected.
You're one of the first travel bloggers. Do you frequent any other travel sites for ideas or whatever reason, curiosity or for any other reason?
Oh, sure. You know, whenever I'm going somewhere, I'll do a Google search on it at least and find out what comes up. The biggest resource is I have a group I started on Facebook, and it's just a Facebook group of well-traveled people. We got close to 4,000 people in it now, and you can ask a question about pretty much anything, and somebody has been there before. And I have found getting that kind of feedback is one of the best things to do. Because you can just ask the question you want to have answered, and if they've been there, they can say, yeah, you know, go here or avoid this. It opens this time of day. And getting that feedback from other travelers is usually one of the best things I think you can do.
Now, Gary, two questions. One, did you start your podcast up again? Because when I Googled you, I think a podcast link came back up. Did you start your own again?
I did. So what happened is I had a podcast with CBS. They started a podcast network, and I didn't really feel that was working out, and so I stopped it.
Okay.
And that was over a year ago, but I got all of the episodes back from them, and so we're in the middle right now. We should actually be done in a week. The old episodes should all be up with a brand new intro and everything else, and I've started recording some new shows. So, yeah, that's called the Global Travel Conspiracy, just an interview show where I talk to travel people I like, and then I'm starting a new podcast called the Everything Everywhere Podcast, which is not really going to be travel per se. It's not going to be an interview show. It'll be just a monologue show where I talk about different places and things, really more of a history show than anything else.
That's really cool. Now, for a guy like you who's done so much, is there one thing travel-wise you haven't done yet?
Oh, there's lots. You know, the more you travel and the more you meet people who travel, the more you discover stuff that you want to do.
So true.
Right? Now, I'm guessing there's
a
lot of people here that never, like, you never heard of Palau before. And you're like, where the hell is that?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to go look it up online. Or South Georgia Island. You didn't know what that was. Or unless maybe you've heard of Ernest Shackleton or something and you heard about it from that. I'd love to do, like, the Trans-Mongolian Railway. Start in St. Petersburg and go to Beijing or something. I'd love to do like a river cruise up the Amazon. There are some really remote islands like Wrangel Island in Russia that I would love to go to. Different parts of Antarctica I'd love to go back. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff I would really like to do.
You come to New York anytime soon or not even on the table?
I'll be there for one night, next month. Well, it's I'm on a layover from Ireland to Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll be back. I speak at the New York Times Travel Show this year in January.
Oh, nice. Well, listen, we're going to link up. Thank you for coming on my show, man. I really, when Lee retweeted you a few months ago, I'm like, oh, let me know. If Lee retweets Travel Guy, I'll check it out. And I'm telling you, your site really blew me away. I just loved it. I loved the fact that it wasn't counting a country. I was in Malaysia for 10 minutes. Like, you really go in-depth. You go to Germany. You've been to 30 places in there. I'm telling you, I can't speak highly enough for your website. Your football team, not so much, but your website I love.
Hey, count the championships.
Gary, listen, 13. I really appreciate it, man. Yes. And we're going to keep in touch, all right, my friend?
All right. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you so much, Gary. Have a great night, brother.